Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
I'm Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm Eli Roth.
This is Marlon Wayans.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
All right, I'm here with Roy Lee. Hello, Roy.
Hello.
How are you, man? How are you holding up? How is all your loved ones and your friends? Are you safe and healthy?
I'm doing fairly well. I've got myself down to a very set routine every day, so it feels like the same day every day, but it makes things go by quickly.
Well, I definitely want to get into that. I want to hear about your routine for sure, because I think everybody is in the exact same boat. We're all feeling a little cabin fever right now. But before we get there, I'm seriously a huge, huge fan of yours and what you've done. And in a relatively short amount of time, you've created a huge empire. And I love, you know, most of the movies that you make, I'm a giant fan of. So I wanted to get into this with you about tracking. I want to talk about IP and kind of your philosophy of making movies. But before you talk about all that, walk me through quickly, like, how did you get into the business? And I know that you worked at Bender Spink before you started your company. So just kind of walk me through getting to Bender Spink.
Okay. Well, I started out here probably in late 96, September 96. I was working at a law firm in D.C. I'd gone to American University Law School. And within a few months, I knew that it wasn't going to be a career for me. So I decided to leave Maryland and come to California, and ended up just doing some general meetings with people. And when some of the people at the law firm I used to work, they had connections in Hollywood, and then one of the places was the company called Alphaville, which was the daughter-in-law of one of the partners of the law firm. And so when I met with Amanda Moose, she said, why don't you start working here to see what this is like? Because it was more of a informational interview at first, and they just happened to have a job opening at the time.
Well, did you grow up in New York, correct?
No, I grew up in New York until I was 3, and then Maryland until I was 26.
Okay, and did you love movies growing up, and did you always want to be in the movie business?
I did love movies. I also loved television and music. And so it was like when I moved to California, it was going to be in one of those three areas. And so I actually had meetings set up in the music industry, not so much in the TV, but some in the film. And so it just happened within 3 days I was working in a film company.
Wow. Do you remember a specific movie that just really got you and got you interested to make the move out here?
There was a bunch of movies that really informed me. It was like Die Hard when I saw that in theaters, or Seven probably is one of the most influential movies. So it's like the big popcorn or thrillers were the ones that really, really got into the film business because of that.
And so when you were at Alphaville, that's when you started tracking. Can you just explain to people kind of what tracking is and what it was like before you created this new system?
Yeah, because part of my job when I was working in Alphaville was to sort of monitor what projects were coming out of the agencies, management companies, or just publishing companies or magazines. Anything that could potentially be turned into a movie, I was supposed to keep track of and make sort of a grid and chart to provide the company with like the latest information of things going out each day. And so in order to do that, what your job entails is to meet other people at other companies that are doing the same thing. I know it sounds counterintuitive to just talk to your competitors, but it's the only way to really cover everything that's going out within Hollywood, or just as most as you can. So you try to make friends with people who have a specific area that they cover. So you go with somebody at a different studio who not necessarily would compete with the company that you're working with. If you had a deal at Universal, you want to make friends with somebody who was at a deal at Warner Brothers or Fox or any other studio. So what I would do is just like create a little group of people and we'd all trade information to know what was going on. And what it normally was at the time when I started was that we'd all have to type up our own reports, put it together in a document, and then give it to the bosses. And so I, at the time, was working a lot with a program called FileMaker and SQL in order to put it all together. And I realized that there was a way to put this on an IP address. This is like before, just around when people are starting to use the web, and there was no Facebook, and there are no things to like collate groups online. And so we just had an IP address and a place where everyone could access a FileMaker type document and update it and share all the information. So you would have other people inputting information on one specific document.
And when you were doing that, because the once you have it online and you kind of, you know, all the, you know, all the scripts coming in from the different agencies and you're getting the opinions and you have all that information, did anything happen back then when you were tracking that kind of made you see any trends of where the movie business was headed? Because at that time, it wasn't as IP driven as it is now. And you certainly were at the forefront of that wave. When you were getting all that information and being part of all these different tracking groups, did that occur to you then, or were you, or is this something you came to a bit later?
Well, actually, I have to step back a bit to explain how I came to that conclusion.
Sure.
It's because I was actually creating my own database when I was starting out working in the film business, because like I knew that I could look at things like studio system and analyze the slates of each studio to know what each company is doing. But sometimes I found that it, like from law school, I knew that doing notes and writing things down made it really sink in with me. So what I would do was I take 25 years of the backstory of every of like Variety and Hollywood Reporter and create my own database inputting every project that was set up over those 25 years. And so every weekend I'd just be sitting there going through old issues, typing in the projects, and then looking at trends within the 25 years. And so what I noticed was that certain conversion rates of projects from development to film was higher in IP than it was in like original scripts or original pitches, which was the lowest end.
Right. And so when you were doing your tracking and seeing the things that were being set up from your tracking board, did that cement in the data was actually correct and the trend was even was becoming even it's almost like a chicken and an egg thing, right? I mean, you had noticed over 25 years that IP had a quicker conversion rate, and of course there's a lot of different reasons for that, you know, pre-sold titles, you know, you already have an audience, less marketing, most of those IP have huge ideas already behind them. But when you started to go out on your own, and certainly when you were at Bender Spink, did you start to test that theory in real practice?
Yes. I mean, I would just not as much at the time because I didn't have the resources to compete against the more established producers, but I would definitely stick to places where I could get the content as well as get the, like, get the rights for things. So it's like the area that I could access were Asian films, because at that time, not many people were looking in that area.
Oh, so then you go to Bender Spink, you're using your tracking knowledge, you guys set up a ton of stuff. At that point, when you're setting up stuff with JC and Chris, what made you have the hunger to go out on your own?
At the time, it was because I was offered a deal at Dimension Films at the time.
Oh, and what was that? What was the reason behind that?
It was just because my process at Bender Spink, or actually right before that, was just always to set up one project or at least initiate one new project a month. And so after 10 months of having 10 projects set up, that Bob Weinstein had called and offered me a deal.
Wow. So when you start your company called Vertigo, walk me through now the thought process of going, obviously going to Asian films you thought was a good idea because no one was tapping into it. But what made you think that that IP specifically would convert?
Well, it was just the films that I initially saw were great. I mean, there was no real market at the time because, there was no streaming services and most people didn't rent, or like the blockbusters at the time didn't rent foreign films, at least the main of the bulk of the foreign films So it was really hard to access it. And it was more just analyzing what was happening at different film festivals around the world and what those concepts were, as well as like looking at the box office charts of various other outside countries outside the U.S.
So this is fascinating to me that you created this database over 25 years, because anybody could do that. I mean, that's a thing of just ingenuity and you looking at trends and figuring out the conversion rates of IP to movies that were getting made, and then looking at film festivals and seeing this IP that was available that not a lot of people had access to. How did you get access to all those early feature films?
I actually got really lucky with The Ring, because with The Ring, it was a producer named Taka who had made the movie for, I think it was like $1.3 million. And then the remake deal that he got was very close to that amount. Wow. And then I'd asked like what other films he had produced. And one of them was what turned out to be The Grudge. And, then that movie came together very quickly. And so he had two fairly high profile Hollywood films from movies he produced in Japan. And a lot of the other producers in the festivals would ask him, like, how did you get these US remakes made of your movies? And he very kindly told people that it was me. And so that I started getting a lot of incoming submissions. So it wasn't that hard to get the material, because it was all coming in like right. via VCR kit tapes at the time.
And, right. And because generally Hollywood likes things to be visual as well as, you know, the written word, I would imagine then you could go to these studio executives and go, hey, just watch this. Obviously you're going to have to read subtitles, but it's at least you'll get a better idea than just a regular script, because you already have the visual medium, especially in horror.
Yes, horror and just like high concept movies, like what turned out to be The Departed, and movies that aren't as obvious as the ones that like turned out to be Eight Below and The Lake House. And so it was all different genres. It was just more of like the Hollywood style movies that were fairly popular in Asia. And so it was like picking the best fruit off the tree, because there was just all hanging there.
And then how do you make that transition then from the Asian films to the more broader IP that you are so famous for? I mean, you have the Lego franchise. I mean, you have Minecraft. You have so many different huge pieces of IP. What made you, you know, what was the idea behind now, you know, swinging towards these huge, huge, huge pieces of IP? And then walk me through just an example of how you were able to obtain the rights. So the reason I'm asking is because so many people that are getting started just feel lost and feel like, you know, well, of course, you know, Roy can go out and get it and, you know, The Departed and Lego, because he's Roy Lee. But you were just starting off like everybody else, you know. And so, you know, how did you then make that switch to go after Lego and Dungeons and Dragons and Minecraft? Because anybody could have done it, and you have all of them. So walk me through kind of how that process started.
It was mainly just making phone calls and asking different departments or different lawyers if they were open to receiving an offer to convert their property into a feature film. Like, just to give one example recently is like we were just I was just thinking about different IP of things that I enjoyed when I was a kid. And one of the things was like I remember playing Dragon's Lair all the time in the arcade. And I was just thinking there was no feature film like that. And so it was just a matter of looking up Don Bluth, who created the game, and calling him up. And at the time, you know, it wasn't listed, but I looked up that he owned a movie theater in Arizona. And so I called and left a voicemail on his answering machine at that office at the movie theater. And he eventually called back, and which led to the Netflix deal of doing it with Ryan Reynolds and the Hageman brothers.
Amazing. Amazing. And so when you come up with these ideas, are you still using your spreadsheet analysis, or are you now just going a little bit more by your gut? How are you making these decisions mostly?
Mostly it's just by my gut of things that I feel like have a clearer path to getting made. And so knowing that, it's like focusing a little bit on IP more than anything else, and genre, like the horror movies, just because that is actually things that I like to see and things that right now in the marketplace people are looking to develop.
And what about the Lego movie? Had you seen the Lego cartoons, and is that what gave you the idea, or what gave you the idea that that could be such a huge franchise?
That one was just at the time, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. There was something that sparked it. It might have been Transformers at the time. And so I'd just called the main switchboard of the Carlsbad office and asked for the licensing department, and ended up speaking with Jill Wilford, who ended up being now the producer of all the movies. And at that time, it was Dan Lin was the studio executive. Surprisingly, Dan was super excited about trying to get it done, but his bosses at that time refused to do it. They just thought it was a dumb idea. And so it just sort of fell by the wayside until Dan decided to go off on his own. And a couple of things that were things I had submitted to him that he decided, he's like, you know, now there's a different regime at the studio. Let's try to put these back together.
And so that's what's so great about you and what you do is, I think people who aren't in the business think that there's some sort of alchemy that to get a movie made, there certainly is some alchemy to that, but I mean, to just get securing rights and to be, and, you know, collecting IP and just finding the ideas, you take such a simplistic approach them in such a practical approach of, well, I found Don Bluth. He owned a movie theater in Arizona. I left a message, and I called Carlsbad. That's where Lego is. So I called him, because I think most people think that it's much more daunting than that. And I think that a lot of people are afraid, first of all, to get a no, but second of all, just to even begin, because they don't know. They think there's some sort of, you know, layer upon layer of corporate lawyers that are going to, you know, stymie them at every turn. And you're proof that you can just, you know, pick up the phone and follow your gut and get things done to at least get the rights.
True. But it also takes having the ability to get a buyer to back what you want to do. And I think I got also lucky at the time because of creating these tracking boards. When I had created the first one, which was about 25 different people in Hollywood, it was that group of people that I was trading information with online was a close group of friends. But then from doing that one database or the one IP address for this group of 25 executives or other producers, or not at this time, they weren't executives, but they were junior executives. I was asked by other people, because we went from spending probably at least 6 hours a day creating this type of document to less than 30 minutes. And so a lot of other people wanted to do the same thing. So I would just replicate with a different IP address and created a different group for another 20 to 30 people who had their own password protected sort of database, which they could use. But within a year, there were probably about 600 different people who had to ask me to create something for them. And so I developed relationships very quickly with these people who all knew of me and also knew that I had access to all the different information, or at least most of them did.
Let's now go through, once you have that buyer and you have this piece of IP, what has been your most successful way to sell that IP to the individual buyers? Like, what approach do you take generally? Do you usually attach a star, attach a director? Do you put some sort of sizzle reel together, a pitch deck? What has been your experience that you've been most successful doing?
It basically, the most success has just been the IP or the project itself. And I work with the studio to put the movie together. I mean, there are times when I would do things early on in by packaging nowadays, because I have a better track record and people would like to get attached to things. But early on, it would be very hard for me to get people to attach to things just based on things that I had or wanted to do. So I would say, like, the Departed was something with Dan Lin as well, where he just saw the movie and we put the movie together.
Right. Did on Dragon's Lair, did you go to Ryan before you sold it to Netflix?
No, actually, that was a very interesting situation where it was already in the works. The deal was being made. And that's when Ryan, I was working with Ryan on another project, which was based on a creepypasta. And I had just brought this up as something that I was in the middle of doing a deal at Netflix because Warner Brothers had passed. And he said, oh, I love Dragon's Lair. And so he wanted to hear the pitch. So I had flown out the Hagemans to meet them in the time period it took to close the chain of title. And he wanted to commit by the time the deal was done. So they closed the rights underlying the chain of title. And then they are actually, I think they're still working on his deal.
That's amazing. So when you get a piece of IP like It or Lego or Dragon's Lair or Minecraft or Dungeons and Dragons, what is your process you go through to try to attach once it's been set up at a studio? What is your North Star in terms of developing these things?
It's mainly finding the best writer that the studio has a great relationship with, because like, you know, every studio has their go-to writers and people that they wanted to be in business with, and just go from the top down and see which person comes in with a take. So oftentimes you hear many different takes before one lands.
And so when you are developing with a studio, you have deals all over the place, and you obviously have, you know, a massively successful track record. Are you finding that they're leaning on you more to do more nowadays than it used to be? Or are you just always been a good partner and sort of worked hand in hand with them? Because it seems like a lot of the people I'm talking to now feel like studios are really wanting things more packaged and things taken more, you know, down the runway before they'll bite. And then even then really looking to us to do, you know, a lot more development, a lot more legwork along the way.
I feel like it's a case by case basis, depending on the property itself. And a lot of times now I still have producing partners on projects just because I have such a volume of projects a lot of there are other people involved that really want to run the development. And so it's each project has a different person on it, or person on my staff or studio executive.
All right. Well, let's talk about your empire. So how many things did you have going when this pandemic hit?
Two TV shows, three movies, two animated movies, which are still going now. It just took a little bit of time to reconfigure things to get people to be able to work from home. So it was about five projects, and one was the pre-production on a New Line project that we're just waiting for things to clear up to see if we could start production.
So pre-pandemic, how would your company generally work? Like what is your modus operandi on a daily basis in terms of your staff and in terms of how you guys approach going after and creating content?
Probably is similar to other companies where we hit lots of incoming submissions that from the different agencies and other producers, and just assessing which one that we feel like has a clear path to production or something that we feel strongly that could get made. And so we just go over to the different projects and try to space them out a little bit more than just set up a lot at the same time, just because it's daunting sometimes to have multiple projects in early stages of development, which is why I'd always before had done one per month and sort of lessened that after a while of having too many projects.
And then once the pandemic hit, how have you adjusted? You said that you have a routine now. Kind of walk me through how your company is kind of handling this, and how has this changed, and how are you getting by with your animated movies and your stuff that was in production that stopped down, and your development and your staff? How are you adapting now?
Well, it's fairly similar to what it was before, other than my schedule is pretty much the same every day. It's just like I get up at 5 o'clock, I read a script or catch up on the news of things that went on while I was sleeping. Then right now it's like during the morning, eat, hang out with a kid, do some work. And then by 1 o'clock, I exercise, listen to Howard Stern until about 3 o'clock, and then get back to work again in the nighttime, watch movies and TV shows, and then start the day over again. So it's that's pretty much the schedule every day. But in all in between is like keeping in touch with the staff of what they're doing and what they're working on, and just getting updates a lot on the things that are progressing.
And the stuff you're reading, is it mostly projects that you already have in development, scripts that are being rewritten, or are you actually still reading spec material and writing samples?
Oh, I read, I love reading things that excite me, whether or not they're my projects or that they're just great writing samples. And so, like, I've got most excited about reading things that were not mine and I just loved them. And then I just set up a Zoom with that writer, just talk about what they're working on.
Right. Given you have such a huge staff and you have such a great work ethic, if you were a producer starting out or a writer, what would be your recommendation of how to organize their day? You know, if you didn't have the luxury of having scripts being submitted to you at such a high volume,
I would probably go on to the Blacklist, the database where they have lots of scripts that were submitted by people, and they have some sort of a coverage associated with it, because a couple of my projects were found on the Blacklist, where anyone could have just read them and acquired the right, or just contacted the writer directly. And things like that is just like, you just have to do the work and just constantly read or look up old books, which I also do, and just things that could have been optioned before that reverted back to the author, or just fell by the wayside. I mean, I talk to other producers all the time now, and I just say, what is your favorite thing that you set up that fell apart or you reverted back to you? And I say, just send it to me and I'll read it. And like just last week, somebody sent me something I really liked, and I sent it to a director, and waiting to see what the response is. And this is something that was set up over 10 years ago.
Right. And what are you doing on a daily basis to kind of keep your creative mojo going? Like, what, you know, you said you were thinking about your childhood and what you were used to be entertained by. And do you have a set time, or do you do that quite a bit? Do you take a walk? Like, what are you doing to keep yourself creatively energized?
Well, watching a movie or TV show at evenings and reading in the morning definitely keeps me excited about things. Like, just like I hear you talking about Dave, I love that show Dave. And just like seeing things like that motivates me to work harder, because I want to find something like that right. would appeal to me. So I'm jealous of Marty as well.
Well, I'm jealous of a lot of stuff you're doing too. So walk me through now in terms of like, where do you think the business is headed, for even forgetting about the pandemic for a second, not just the practical, mm-hmm. not just the practical part of the business, but in terms of, you know, you have these, you know, insights, and you have these databases, and you've watched things over the last 25 years. So where do you believe that, even forgetting about COVID, because that's just a practical of how things are distributed, but where do you think the business is headed now creatively?
Creatively, it felt like it was definitely IP related. IP branded material are things that are like the big spectacle things, or the movies that people would go out to see, as well as like the communal experiences, which were the horror movies and the comedies every now and then that just like were so much better because you saw it with a group of people. And other than that, I feel like they're going to be shifting more towards streaming.
And so how have you adjusted to that? What's your take on what you think the proliferation of streaming will lead to? What are you excited about going after now, given that there are so many ways to distribute your content?
I just still go by things that seem interesting to me. And if it's an IP, great. And if it's a horror IP, even better. Like, it's just constantly on the lookout. I mean, I could give you an example. Like, there's this movie that Netflix just picked up, which was based on a YouTube short film that I saw called Tickle Monster, where I just contacted the guy using the platform of YouTube and said, like, I loved your short. Is there anything you want to do to try to convert this into a movie? And he sent me a script, and that ended up being the movie His House that was picked up at Sundance by Netflix.
Oh, that's awesome. And how did you come about that? Are you just out there looking at YouTube, or did somebody turn you on to it?
somebody, Alden Dahlia, was a junior executive at some company that I just met with him on a general, and he was just talking about the interesting things he's been working on or trying to work on. And one of the things he offhandedly mentioned is like was the short film Tickle Monster. And I watched it, and that's when I contacted the filmmaker. I also gave Alden a co-producer on the movie, so
that's awesome. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And so basically, what I'm hearing from you is you're just super open to everything, and you keep your eyes open and your ears open to things that excite you and get you energized. And anybody can do that. Anybody can be just out there looking around for something that gets them excited. Don't be afraid to then try to hunt that down, because I think a lot of people assume, oh, somebody must already have that, and they don't take the extra effort to go after the rights of something that excites them.
That's true. I mean, I feel like a lot of times the things that I set up, people said, like, I can't believe that those rights were just sitting there. And it is true that they're running out of things because people are getting, there's more and more companies acquiring rights. But you never know, especially since a lot of things are options for 18 plus 18, which means by 3 years, if the movie's not made or the TV show's not made, the rights would revert back to the rights holder. So then you could just start all over again.
And if you now were a young person starting off in terms of having no idea or just where to start hunting for IP, where would you, not even scripts, where would you head to first, the library or the internet, or you know what would you begin scouring if you were a young producer looking for new ideas?
Definitely the internet, and probably monitoring a lot of the niche sites that talk about films or people that are huge fans and just discuss ideas. It's like that's probably like a lot of times I've got ideas just based on reading other people's blogs or just articles talking about like the top 10 remakes that never happened, or just like doing searches online about different things. That I remember I had a keyword search on YouTube is like should be remade, or words that were telling me like this should be a movie. And after a while, it got to be too many and I stopped doing it. But like things like that, like, because I get constant emails like this should be a movie, this should be a movie. If it was anywhere on a website that it would used to email me, and then I would just look at that and see if it was worthy. But there are so many of them. But if you have the time, I would do it. But right now, it's just like it's not worth it for me because I already have a lot of incoming projects.
So when you are just trying to decide if something's worthy to be theatrical versus, you know, streaming, which is sort of the big conversation right now, and we hear it so much as producers in terms of, oh, it's got to be theatrical. It's got to be theatrical worthy versus, you know, streaming. What's your gut of what, you know, I know you mentioned comedy and horror, but what's your gut in terms of when you're looking at things and trying to decide where you should set them up? What's your barometer of what's theatrical worthy?
I don't really have one because I consider streaming just as good as doing it theatrical at this point. I know I disagree with lots of filmmakers that really prefer the theatrical experience, but when I try to explain to them sometimes when we have similar deals, it's like we're talking about a 3-month window at best that people will see this movie based on the deal. After that, I'd argue that more people see every film in another format than theatrical of any movie made in history. So for me, it's like if the deal's better in streaming, I would just as soon take that over a theatrical deal.
Well, have you done a movie, completed a movie at Netflix?
Yes. The movie called Death Note, which was one of their early original films. And we're working on a sequel now.
I mean, because the experience of making the movie, obviously Scott Stuber is there, who's running original content. He was a studio executive and a producer. Most of the executives that are there worked at either studios or production companies. The experience of making the movie is almost identical. It's the only difference is the marketing and distribution.
Correct. I find it to be very similar, if not better at times. I mean, without giving specifics, like we sometimes want a little bit more when we were making the movie that we were given it, that I would argue that we probably wouldn't have gotten it at a studio, at a theatrical studio.
Right. And you are also doing television as well. And so when you are sitting down to think about, okay, should this be a limited, it should be a series, should be a motion picture, what is that thought process at your company?
It's basically the same thing as feature films these days. It's like, is it an interesting thing that I don't think that's out there? And just going by my gut that way too. And a lot of times it was the early TV shows that I had put together were all based on IP. The first one being based on Psycho, which was Bates Motel, and the second one being The Exorcist, which was based on The Exorcist. And now it's The Stand, which is based on the Stephen King book. And then there was an original one that was for Amazon, which is called Them.
Speaking of
another horror series.
Speaking of Stephen King, how did you get the rights to it originally?
Originally, this is something where Dan Lin was an executive of the studio, and I was looking up one of my favorite books of Stephen King. It was It, and dug deep into the underlying rights and found out that Warner Brothers owned it by virtue of acquiring a company through another company in the television world. And so at that time, they didn't even know they had the rights to it. And so until they did a chain of title search, which they do on a case-by-case basis at Warner Brothers at that time, they uncovered that the rights were in fact owned by them and could be developed.
That is so fascinating, because I think that people would never believe that that would happen, that you would absolutely know you had the rights to it if you had them. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, they probably own lots of IP that they hadn't really had a process of figuring out if they actually do own them, because I always asked them, is like, don't you have like a book or like a database of all the things that you own? And this was more than 15 years ago, 12 years ago. And he's like, no, we have to do a search each time for each property that we may own. There is no database of it. Right. And I'm sure that Jason is going to change things up now to make streamline things, because it just doesn't make any sense, because I'm sure they're sitting in lots of these gold mines.
Right. And you have made such huge global movies such as It, and you know, most of your movies are huge theatrical global experiences. And our good friend Chris Fenton was just on here talking about China. Have you had any experiences with any of the Chinese companies or Chinese distribution? I'm sure, given your movies, that you must have been approached quite a bit from these different companies.
I had been. And in fact, it was Chris Fenton's interview with you that made me understand what was going on behind the scenes with some of these offers, because I had been approached to sell my company to various different Chinese companies. And at the time, I was like, the numbers were so crazy high that I thought there was too good to be true. And that coupled with the fact that I just didn't want to be an employee with someone, so I just turned it down flat. And now I just was understanding what the process of like doing sort of the stock manipulation in order to compensate the buys that were happening in the U.S.
Yeah, because
turned down all the offers.
Yeah, because the multiples were so high for all of those entertainment companies that they would try to mix those into their portfolios. I can imagine your company would be a great one for that. And so you're an independent production company with a deal at Warner Brothers. Have you ever thought of creating a studio or going after some sort of distribution or anything like that?
Nope. I mean, I don't really have those grand designs, because I actually set my goals in life a little bit lower than most other people. So I've actually reached them. And in terms of like having the lifestyle that I want. And now all I do things are just because I enjoy them. And so building a company like that and building a slate financing deal, it's just not interesting to me.
Well, you sound like somebody who does do quite a fair bit of goal setting, since you have these systems that you've put in place for your life and you went back and looked at these things over 25 years and saw trends and things like that. Do you do some sort of formal goal setting, you know, either on a yearly basis or even further along?
Nope, not anymore. I mean, I just you do things them. That are fun for me. Yeah.
Are you still having fun doing it?
I love it. I mean, this is something that I'm doing now that I would do even if I wasn't getting paid. And it's just because I enjoy it. And it's like the fact that you could actually discover some great writer or a great director and help their career is just like the best thing that I could possibly strive for right now.
And so if you had to do it over again and you were starting over right now, how would you approach it? Would you do the same thing? Would you go back over 25 years and create these databases? How would you approach, given all the streamers, given that TV is so ubiquitous, given that there's so many outlets, how would you go about starting to become a producer right now?
I would do exactly the same thing, because it's just like knowing, having like a basis of knowledge of everything that's gone on in the past informs me in doing anything I do business-wise in the future. So it's sort of like I saw the trends. I've seen the different projects. Like the database was only for my own edification, for me to like hammer in what I was working on. I mean, just things that I was working on. Not that I needed to know everything, because I could have just used the Studio System just to read all the different projects. But like by entering it in myself, it really sunk in like what projects were and what the things that are happening around town. So like sometimes when somebody asks me, like, do you remember any type of project that fits this type of thing that we're looking for? Sometimes it'll just like from 15 years ago just comes in my head and pulls it out. And so I've had projects come from that just because I had done that in the past.
And what advice right now during these trying times and your staff's all at home, what advice are you giving your executives of how to keep their morale up, how to keep their creative juices going? Like, what are you telling them to be thinking about and doing at this moment?
It hasn't really changed that much other than just do what they're doing and trying to push things forward or find things that are interesting. That's basically everyone's job in any production company around town. So it's just keep that going.
Right.
Because it doesn't change other than face-to-face meetings. That's the biggest difference in the development game. And now with Zoom or Skype or any of these types of video conferencing, it's making things easier, actually.
And I always ask this at the end of every interview. What, because you had so many huge movies, you can pick more than one. What was your best day on set?
Probably the with The Ring and the first day, because it's one of these things where it's like hard to believe when you're first starting out that you could find something, help put it together, and have these hundreds of people working on it, and it's just becoming a reality. And just yeah. The first time you do it, it's I don't think there's anything better than that.
And what have you seen that's really inspired you during this pandemic?
Well, I could tell about one thing I saw right before the pandemic hit, which was like in January. There was a thing that Aaron Paul had turned me on to, which is a thing called Cages. I don't know if you've heard of it. It was like this hologram theater downtown.
No, I haven't.
It was one of these things where Aaron was talking about how amazing it was, and like I had to go check it out. And this is right before things are about to shut down, and he had just gone a few, like the day before. And so I went, and I was like, holy crap, this is like the future of theatrical experiences with film. Because what do they do is they have this really interesting story that's told through holograms and sound within this small confined theater, that if that were done with some of the IP of like La La Land or Nightmare Before Christmas, it would blow people's minds.
Wow.
And so I was telling people to go check it out. And this, they had spent 4 years developing this technology and they just launched it and they had to shut down. So it's like people were just starting to find out about it. I think late January was the first article in LA Times about them. And so that was luckily, I think they're financed enough they could sit this through, because their facilities were just like this downtown old sound, like what, I don't even know what it was, but it's just like it was really incredible. So like once things clear up, I would suggest go check that out and just see if there's a way to use that format to tell stories, because you could replicate what they were doing via like pop-up tents or retrofit theaters around the country or around the world. And it's just like the Cirque du Soleil of the theatrical experience, but you could have live performers working with different holograms. And right now they're only doing it 4K. And they said with 8K, it would look really photorealistic.
Whoa. Oh man, I'm definitely going to check that out. That's amazing. And then lastly, I just want to thank you for doing this, man. You're a force of nature for sure. And I've just been so eager to look under the hood and just to hear your thought process, because I'm just in awe of what you do and how much you've been able to accomplish. Again, you've only been doing this the last, 15 or so years and build a huge, huge, huge company. Just lastly, is there anything else, like in terms of, like you said, you're probably go against the grain a little bit in distribution. Is there anything else you see on the horizon in terms of where we're headed? By the way, it could be this new holographic experience. In terms of our business, is there anything just in general in terms of the distribution or the overall health and welfare of our business that you see changing or you can see coming down the road?
Well, it's hard to say with the pandemic happening, and it's just going to be a really slow process to get things back to normal, because I actually don't think we're going to have everything up and running until there's a vaccine. So it's really hard to say how things are going to turn out within that time period.
And how are you holding up? Just waiting and developing and getting ready for when the starting pistol goes off, or are you sort of trying to figure out if there's something like animation that you can be doing while this is going on?
Well, I have the two animated movies, but it's just like the development game is still happening. And so, like, I would say that my skill set is mostly in the first third of production, meaning the identifying material, defining the right elements to put it together, and then developing like the script until the point where it gets greenlit. So now's the time where it's perfect for me, because I could do everything that I'm really good at, as opposed to like, I'm not necessarily as good in the post-production process or marketing and trying to decide that. It's so I'm working full time, same as usual.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you, man. I really, really appreciate it. This was unbelievably good advice for anybody who is either in the business or wanting to get in, because it's very simple and nuts and bolts. It just takes some vision and a lot of hard work. And you have that in spades, my friend. So thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.